Today on Movie Wallers, we're going to review 100 Foot Journey, Guardians of the Galaxy, and What If. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello, hello, hello.
Greetings.
Good evening.
And in the back of the airplane we have been.
We have.
Rashmi and I took a trip to England for a wedding.
My big fat Indian wedding. But it wasn't my big fat Indian wedding. It was a big fat Indian wedding.
It's your big fat family. That sounds such like an insult.
That's mean. It was an amazing wedding.
It was the big fat family wedding, but
how long
not
did
fat
it
family.
Go on for a week?
It was, I think overall it probably lasted about 2.5 weeks, but we were there for 10 days.
Wow.
It was a long wedding.
That's pretty standard though, isn't it?
I guess.
Were people still like going on last day?
Yeah.
Or they were all exhausted?
Yeah, no, people were sad it was over.
Okay.
Well, after it lasts that long, I guess you're kind of used to it.
Yeah, it becomes like your norm.
It was like when the World Cup ended. I was like, what am I going to do without all this soccer in my life?
Joe, the soccer's gone now. You can't stretch it and keep talking about
it. And it's another 4 years. Oh, too long.
But I would think, you know, after 5 days, it would just be too much. I'd be like, all these people go away.
No, because then you're like, oh, I can wear the next outfit. And what are we going to eat? And what are we going to dance to?
Oscars, there are outfit changes.
There are outfit changes.
Every woman had to have a different outfit for every event in this wedding.
Yes.
I'm telling you, it's driven by marketing. All of the Indian shopkeepers that make these suits and sell them are totally having a laugh with this.
Yes. Joe, Indian weddings are not a hallmark occasion. They're not manufactured.
They are totally culturally manufactured.
I guess they're from the old days when people used to travel for miles and miles to, you know, get to their betrothed one. So,
yeah.
Which is actually a good segue to the movie 100 Foot Journey, if you want to go there.
Sure, why not?
That was a really good segue, Joe.
I planned it just like that.
Well done.
Okay, so the 100 Foot Journey, which is the Kadam family, clashes with Madame Mallory, proprietress of a celebrated French restaurant, after they open their own nearby eatery, until undeniable chemistry causes the Madame to take gifted young chef Hassan under her wing. So this is directed by Lassie Hallström, and it's written by Stephen Knight and Richard Seymour. And I guess Richard Seymour is the guy who wrote the book. This is based on a book. And it stars Helen Mirren, Om Puri and Manish Dayal. And I haven't seen this one, Yazdi, but it sounds like it's got all those things I love. French cooking and Indian cooking.
Right.
And Helen Mirren. And Om Puri.
Yes.
So.
And reviews have been somewhat middling for this one. So, Yazdi, let us know what you thought.
Did you see the movie Chocolat?
Yes.
And did you see the movie Cider House Rules?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, this is made by the same director. So that should give you an idea about... This is not a director who necessarily believes in the strength of subtlety. This is a director who believes in hitting you on the head with everything he's got, with the heaviest frying pan, if you don't mind. But I'm going to say this, which is going to come back for another movie we're going to discuss in this podcast. It all comes down to how you're wired, okay? Are you wired for schmaltz? And I've realized, you know...
love it.
Yeah, that I'm wired for schmaltz.
Big rolling in muddy schmaltz.
Yes, I'm a big rolling in muddy, biggie schmaltz, you know. And you know, just to be clear, I'm not talking about bad schmaltz. But when good schmaltz is done well, it works. And so I think, you know, this director is the king of schmaltz. And actually, I think...
I love that word, by the way.
Schmaltz.
Schmaltz. What a great word.
It is a good word, yeah.
It is a great word. Actually, when the movie starts off brilliantly, I thought, and, you know, I actually wrote in my notes that, oh my God, is this going to be a 9 out of 10 movie for me? And I think as the movie progressively moves on, and there are several issues I had with the movie, and, you know, I can talk more about it, it kind of became less authentic, and you could kind of see the gears moving, and you can see that some of it is manufactured to elicit certain reactions. But by Jove, I mean, again, when you've got a Helen Mirren and when you've got an Om Puri, you deserve yourself to watch the movie just to see how these two people can take the worst of dialogue, the most innocuous of lines, and make them stick and make them work. I mean, Om Puri, I mean, he's been in Indian films forever, and you know, he's an amazing actor. But even in a language which is not his mother tongue, mm-hmm. I mean, see his intonations. I mean, he gets all the laughs in the movie just by virtue of how he speaks the line. It's not a funny line, but it's how he says it.
Right.
And you know, so in a movie that is trying to over-sentimentalize, these two lead actors, I think, keep things down and they kind of pull it down.
So this was my fear, Yazzie, that Om Puri was going to be the same character he is in the film, like East is East. And Helen Mirren with a French accent would just be too difficult to watch. And in a way, I wasn't unhappy when we missed the screening. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't feel, I mean, although I love the topic, it doesn't feel like a film I want to watch. And I don't know why. It doesn't look appealing to me.
You should watch it.
Okay.
Because it's about food.
Mm.
And it's about, you know, breaking cultural boundaries. And even as I'm saying this, I'm realizing how dreadfully corny it sounds. But I think, I mean, it's based on a book which is very popular. And I think the movie does a really good job. I think at least up until, I'd say, the two-third mark, the movie does a really good job with both of those things. And, yeah. and Rashmi, with your background in food, I think yeah. in particular you would really enjoy it. Because a lot of the movie is about, you know, French cooking, which is very, very unforgiving.
Right.
And it's very, thou shall do that, for good reason.
Right.
And the movie plays off of that, how, you know, there's absolutely no room for creativity in that. And that, you know, go be creative somewhere else. And I think the movie also does a good job of pointing out to kind of xenophobia and people being afraid of a different culture. And
yeah.
it plays it for laughs. It gets serious. And if you've read a lot of the reviews of the movie, you will see that many people have complained about the last act of the movie.
Yeah.
I would have actually preferred if the movie ended at the two-third point. It adds this whole extra chapter, which is fine, but I thought it was really unnecessary. Actually, the movie gets to such a nice high, and then it adds this other chapter, which kind of brings things rolling back down, and it kind of drags the movie out a little
bit. Like an epilogue?
Almost, it's more than an epilogue. The whole final act in the movie is something different than what the movie seems to have been leading up right. until that point. But, you know, there's an amazing scene in the movie. And this is why I say I like Schmalt so much, is there's a great scene in the movie because, you know, Helen Mirren's been really, really giving these people a really hard time, right? The premise is that this Indian family comes up and opens an Indian restaurant right across from her two-star Michelin-rated restaurant.
Yeah.
One-star Michelin-rated restaurant. And she does everything she can in her power to kind of, you know, have their business fail. And it's almost like a War of the Roses. Each one's right. doing something to kind of make their business fail. Up until one of the people working in Helen Mirren's restaurant does something which goes too far.
Right.
And at that point, Helen Mirren, I mean, it sounds so corny again as I'm seeing it, but she kind of realizes that this is stupid. She somehow manages to find the goodness in her heart. And she goes an extra step and does something which, I don't know, I mean, I started crying. There you have it. So, you know, I mean, it's... Well, so, you know, I mean, what can you do? I mean, again, I like Schmaltz. And so I was, you know, it was all manufactured. It was all made for you to make you feel something. And I felt a lot of it. So there you have it.
Hmm.
Yeah, we had a movie like that very recently that... it was the one about the two kids with cancer.
Oh, yeah.
The Fault in Their Stars.
Yeah, which was totally manipulative and totally contrived. But nonetheless, for me at least, very effective. So, I mean, is this along that lines, or is it not?
No,
quite
it's not nearly as manipulative.
Okay,
it's not nearly
good
as
because
then I
think
I'll be
gone.
Okay because I think Chocolat was kind of like that for me as well, but I really enjoyed that film.
Yeah, I really liked Chocolat,
and that got mixed reviews as well. That was that as I just looked on Rotten Tomatoes, Chocolat came in around 60%, and that's what this movie's running at too. So I think obviously if you're a fan of this type of stuff, it works for you. If you're not, you're just not going to be convinced.
Yeah, and it's really, really about food. Although the New York Times critic, you know, found something blatantly wrong about something which is being shown cooked in the movie. But all, you know, that...
and he's a chef, is he?
Well, I don't know. But Manuela Dargis said that one of the... you know, they talk about the five basic sauces in French cooking, and one of the sauces which is being made in the movie, they use olive oil, and apparently you never use olive oil.
Correct.
Scandal.
But, you know, anyway, the movie really is about food. It starts off about food. It's about how food unifies us.
Yeah.
You know, Helen Mirren's, her character's whole pursuit is to get that second Michelin star. And the kind, you know, the movie, and so she kind of is humanized a little bit because mm-hmm. she is this way because she's so
driven
to get that second star.
Yeah.
And there's a great part where she recognizes that Om Puri's son is a very gifted chef, but she cannot bring herself to acknowledge that. So I think the movie plays by all of those things reasonably well.
Okay.
And it's beautifully filmed.
Score and sum up.
The movie does not play it fair, I think, at many parts, because it goes out of its way sometimes to present the French food as overly bland versus the Indian food as being so colorful. And so I wish it had been a little bit more
balanced,
you know, in its depiction of this war between the two cultures. There's a sweet little romance built in, which is as manufactured as it'll ever get, but I completely bought it. You know, I don't know, you know, I don't know what to make of movies that just make you happy. I mean, and it may be because I like food so much. It's because I like schmaltz. I just sometimes want to go to a movie and feel good coming out. And mm-hmm. I really felt happy and alive and just happy to be alive when I came out of the movie. And you got to respect that. So
what food did you want to eat as soon as you came out?
Parathas.
Oh, I want to see the movie now.
Yeah. So maybe it's a bit of a exceptionally generous score, but I'll give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
I will. I don't know. It has little lines which kind of resonated for me. You know, there's a line that food is memories. And that kind of resonates for me because, you know, I immigrated from another place. And for me, I a lot of my memories of childhood, of my family is associated with food. And the movie mm-hmm. kind of, and it might be from the original, it might not be from the movie, but the book on which it's based. But
yeah, I mean, stuff like that works for me.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah, I'm kind of keen to see that.
And the other thing I like about the movie is there's a lot of Hindi dialogue in the movie where mm-hmm. Om Puri's family talks in Hindi. And the movie very wisely, and there's a lot of it, chooses not to translate. There's no subtitles for the people talking.
Oh, interesting.
So it kind of leaves it up to the actors to convey, you know, from their facial expressions and from the reactions from non-Hindi speakers to figure out what they're saying.
I mean, you understand Hindi.
I do understand Hindi.
So you have an edge.
I have an edge. But I commend that because I think it allows those actors a chance to, you know, like you really feel like you're eavesdropping into this culture that you don't know much about and you don't even understand the language, but the way they're reacting and the way they're talking, you can kind of sense this person is angry with this person for this reason. So I think we'll
have to go see it.
Check.
Sounds good.
And just for curiosity, I googled schmaltz. Does anyone know what schmaltz actually is?
I bet it's a sticky thing.
I bet it's
a
food.
It's a food.
It's definitely a food. It's rendered chicken or goose fat used for frying or, get this, as a spread in German, Austrian and Polish cuisine.
Oh, there you go.
There's nothing wrong with goose fat.
Rendered goose fat on bread.
Yum.
That sounds disgusting.
It sounds so comforting.
Goose fat is delicious.
Really?
Have you ever had roasted potatoes made in goose fat?
No.
They're divine.
I've had them with duck fat.
Really? Same idea.
Okay.
In
fact, we had a Christmas dinner at Joe's mum's house where she made us a goose and roast potatoes in goose fat. It was divine.
I mean, the only thing with that particular Christmas dinner is my mum has an insistence on no one will ever be food poisoned by my mother. So she cremates everything.
Oh, yeah.
And she cooked that goose for like 3 days, I think it was.
There was a lot of goose fat that came out of it.
It was delicious afterwards.
But it was so good.
The goose with that, I think, was like a 20-pound goose, ended up being like £3 when it came out of the oven. It was hilarious. It was so fun. It was tasty.
But it was delicious.
Don't you want that? You want all the fat out so you can enjoy the meat.
No, but this goose was kind of crispy and crunchy.
Very good.
Yeah. All right.
Om Puri's line readings alone, I think people should go watch it.
Cool. Let's move on to our second movie of the week, which is What If? Or should we talk about Guardians?
Let's talk about Guardians.
Okay.
Oh, Guardians. Okay.
So, Guardians of the Galaxy is the latest to come from Marvel Studio. It's kind of an interesting franchise here because I don't think... Well, at least I'm not intimately familiar with the Marvel Universe. I don't know about you guys, but these aren't characters that I had heard of before. I think they did have some popularity, perhaps, in comic book lore, maybe not so much on television or as a cartoon series. Again, I might be completely mistaken by that, but it's certainly not a franchise that was as big. And so this somewhat represents, I think, a bit of a risk by Marvel. They took a franchise that was kind of relatively unknown compared to things like X-Men and the Avengers, and they've come up with basically a third universe. This movie stars Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, David Bautista, Bradley Cooper, Michael Rooker, Lee Pace, and many, many more. Marvel introduces the movie as an action-packed epic space adventure where brash adventurer Peter Quill finds himself the object of an unrelenting bounty hunt after stealing a mysterious orb coveted by Ronan, a powerful villain with ambitions that threaten the universe. Guys, what did you think of Guardians of the Galaxy?
Okay, so the monsters and the space aliens are strange to look at, and the good guys are really weak, and the bad guys are traditional baddies, and this looks corny and cheesy, and like it should be a film for kids. But it totally worked for me. I had an amazing blast at this movie, and I really enjoyed it because it has a huge heart, and this movie is so sweet and so funny.
Yes, Steve.
So, you know, anybody who knows me knows that I did not grow up in the Marvel Universe. I don't pray at the Church of Marvel. And so this whole movie to me, I mean, I went in there like really expecting nothing. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, they are really lesser known characters even within the Marvel Universe. And that cast didn't really, you know, inspire a lot of confidence in me. But actually, the entire film turned out to be, for me, a giant act of proselytizing. I mean, it was like I went to some kind of church and I got converted. I mean, minute by minute, the movie really charmed me into submission to the point that at about the halfway point, I kind of felt this feeling and I was trying to understand what it was. And it kind of reminded me of the first time I had watched Star Wars. And that's, yeah. You know, I remember being a child and just being like, oh my God, this is so much fun, that kind of feeling. And I've talked about this for a long time. I mean, I think, I'm sorry, I'm going to go there, Joe. But, you know, I have tremendous respect for Christopher Nolan, but I'm sick of comic books which are, you know, grave and serious and the weight of the whole world is on their shoulders. That's not, well, maybe that's some kind of comic books, but the comic books I like are the ones which are silly and fun and giddy and about people flying up into the sky with joy. And this movie has so much joy and giddiness about it. I'm converted. I love this movie.
I'm going to have to be the naysayer on this one then. I mean, no, it's not to say that I hated the movie. I mean, it was a lot of fun in the moment. Good characters, a fun plot, good balance of humor, some nicely choreographed fight sequences. So, you know, what is not to love, but I just couldn't get myself to love this film. I never really connected with it. I never found myself feeling anything other than this is a contrived set of circumstances in the comic book tradition. And ultimately, I've come to realize that a key difference between me and I think you guys when it comes to comic book movies is I like my movies to be a little more melancholy. I want a little bit more gritty realism in there. And this is a cartoon. This is a celluloid cartoon. Well, it's not even celluloid these days, but it really is. It's a live action cartoon, and that's great. That has its audience, but that's not for me.
I agree. I was going to say, I think Joe hates anything joyful, no, but that, well, would no, be no. A bit, that would be a bit severe. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be Dark Knight, but Captain America Winter Soldier this year was a great example of where I think they got the balance right for me.
Yeah.
Because that felt like a serious movie, but it had some joyous elements in it, but it still felt like a serious kind of, you know, Captain America had a big deal to handle in this particular movie. This just felt like a lark.
Yeah.
These guys were just larking around the universe, killing bad guys, which is fine, but I need more. For me, this is a kind of throwback to the kind of films that we had in the 80s,
right,
where superheroes were a lot more lighthearted and a lot more fun, but lacked that certain realism. And as an adult, I can't quite buy that universe.
Yeah, for me, I just love that the movie's having so much fun. Mm-hmm. Those characters are having so much fun. And Yasi, you said the words. It's so joyful and it's energetic and it delivers scene after scene and it's witty and it's smart. And all the time. You know, it's delivering and it's witty and it's smart and it's comical and it's joyful, and you have this huge smile on your face. It's so entertaining.
I mean, this is exactly the problem. This movie is an answer to all the complaints I had about Man of Steel last year. I mean, yeah. Man of Steel was just
dull.
So dull and heavy and drab and senseless and pointless.
Sensitive.
This movie has it has a great story arc.
It was
arc.
Not senseless. It was totally not senseless.
It
yes,
was completely...
there was too much crash bangy stuff.
Yeah.
But the whole arc of Superman in that movie was what drew us to the character.
It was so
for
broody.
Me, it was broody, but that was the whole point.
No, but so forget the emotionality. I think even mechanically it was weak. The way it was put together,
it
the
was
story.
Too crash bangy. I'll give you that. I will give you the fact that there was too much of the smash bang building smash bang building smash. It was boring in that context, but in terms of the story that I think they were trying to tell, which was this man coming to terms essentially with who he was and how he didn't fit into this universe, that was a different approach to the comic book universe.
But all the action
scenes.
This
was just larking
one.
Around. It was set piece
yeah,
after set piece after set piece after set piece, where people like make wisecrack one-liners. There's some beautiful set pieces in it. There's one involving Groot, which I think was one of my favorite movie moments of the year. Don't get me wrong, I didn't hate this film, but it was just a lark.
And but let's get
for
it,
me, that's too lightweight.
I agree, but it's not larky in the sense that like the Green Lantern was larky, right?
It's
right?
not
the,
stupid.
Right,
no, that was a malarky. I mean,
yeah,
that
I agree. That
like,
was a right, but let's not. But that also was trying to maybe be the same type of movie, and I think this is you're not giving this credit for being smart and witty, and maybe that was lost on you because it wasn't brooding.
It's just not my favorite flavor of hero movie. I mean,
but I think this was extremely smart, and I think it had that level of cartoonness about it, but then there was another layer which was actually very clever and smart, and the whole throwback to the 80s and the way the equipment
is used
very very clever.
No, but this is how I mean what you call lark is what I find lightness of touch, which the comic universe needs, that lightness of touch. And see the mechanics of those action scenes. There is not a wasted, I need to see it again, but so, the best I could tell, there is not a wasted action scene there. See, they're all set pieces, but see how well each of those set pieces click together. It doesn't seem like it's a whole bunch of, you know, no, people just didn't say, I'm going to throw in, you know, a fight with the Ewoks here, and I'm going to throw in, you know, this escape from this planet here, and I'll just string it all together. There is a proper story about it. And I
don't deny that, but I think we're on slightly different sides of the same fence, because Captain America is one that does it right. I acknowledge that Man of Steel had some huge faults. That didn't stop me from enjoying it. And I think that was a movie that I would always enjoy regardless of how bad it was. I love the premise. I love the art direction of that film. But Winter Soldier compared to this, Winter Soldier for me is far superior. What I'm hearing from you guys is that
I'm not comparing it to Winter Soldier, mind
so
you.
So let's do a comparison.
I loved Winter Soldier, absolutely. But I think it's a whole other kind of movie. I'm going to give it the same grade as the Winter Soldier.
Okay.
But I love everything about the Captain America universe. In fact, I like the first one even better than the second one. But I think this movie reminded me of, I think it's a cross between Star Wars and Indiana Jones. And those movies did not have some big statement to say about how
I
we
agree.
Live today.
Yeah.
They only wanted to make you happy. They wanted to make you laugh. They wanted to entertain you.
And they were adventures.
And as long as it's, exactly, and as long as they're not the Green Lantern, as long as they're not insulting you.
Right.
I think those things are hard to do to have that.
I agree.
I mean, just the opening credits, you know, when it comes back with that 80s throwback, when he's listening to the song on the, you know,
Walkman.
On his Walkman, and this, I forget, it's got a great 80s soundtrack, but the song comes on and the name of the movie comes on, and I felt happy.
I agree. Yeah. The other thing I want to say is I think the movie was elevated because Chris Pratt is so adorable and endearing to watch. I mean, I just love him as the kind of the unhero hero. And I mean, I've always loved him in things like Parks and Recreation, and I think he always plays the sidekick. He was in the 5-year engagement as well. And it's really nice to see him carrying a movie, and I think he did it really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the casting, all of the casting here was inspired.
Very good, very, very good. Except, you know, Zoe Saldana doesn't need to eat a sandwich at some stage soon. And I think she's really highly in risk of being typecast in this kind of space alien.
She's there. Yeah. That's already happened to her. And I think that's in part because she really broke with Avatar. So that's what people know her for. And
but she's the green version of the blue character she played in Avatar.
No, she absolutely is. That's right.
I know, I kept thinking that.
And I couldn't escape the fact that I was looking at Zoe Saldana. I never felt that there was more to that character, which was kind of, which is what you're saying here, Yazdi. I mean, I think that was a little frustrating to see her there. But everyone else was incredibly well cast. I thought Bradley Cooper did a terrific voice.
Brilliant.
I don't even remember the fox's name, but...
Or Rocket.
Raccoon Fox.
His name is Rocket, right?
Yeah, Rocket, yeah.
Yes.
Very cute.
Really good. He had some of the good lines in the movie, and Groot was...
I love
Was that
Groot.
Vin Diesel?
Apparently Vin Diesel.
That was Vin Diesel.
But there's only one line Groot keeps saying again and again.
You have to wonder why he got paid for that.
But you know what?
For big names.
I love Groot so much, I think he should get an Oscar. It's one of the best
He shouldn't
characters.
Get an Oscar.
It's one of the best
it's
characters
a great character,
I've seen.
Yes.
It's so... So, so adorable.
Yeah, I don't think the performance is Oscar-worthy.
No, but I think it's
definitely one of the more fun characters that we've seen. And that sequence that he's in, I'm sure you remember the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Brilliant. It was as good as a Quicksilver moment this year's X-Men.
Yes.
Do you remember that moment? Oh,
no. I think the one where he covers everybody at the end. Is that the one? No spoilers.
No, it was the one just before that where he kind of does a smile at the end of it.
Okay.
He takes out a bunch of bad guys. Anyway, there was just that kind of
cockiness.
I got it kind of look to his face. But anyway, that terrific
I mean,
character.
Groot was as adorable as Mr. Peabody and Sherman, I think.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Yeah. I mean, to give credit where it's due, you know, Bradley Cooper, he's unrecognizable. At no point in the movie does he sound like Bradley Cooper.
I agree.
Whatever he's done with his voice, whatever it is, good for him to kind of not slum it, not just, you know, go to the studio and just, you know, say what he's supposed to. I mean, clearly, they bothered to create a very interesting character.
I mean, it's almost like the little dragon in, like, another one of my favorite Disney movies, which is Mulan, you know, when Eddie Murphy voices, you know, or like even Robin Williams as Aladdin. I mean,
he's better than that. He's not just a sidekick.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a real character with real...
Yeah.
He was actually one of the more interesting characters. I wanted to kind of see more about him in the movie.
And we may in a sequel or many more to come.
I would imagine that Marvel is going to bring back Guardians.
I hope so.
Well, they announced the sequel a week before the movie even opened. Yeah.
Yeah, we went in knowing there's going to be a sequel.
I also like, I mean, ordinarily, this is the kind of stuff which would really annoy me, but I like the fact that this movie has a lot of pop culture references, which have nothing to do with this Marvel universe, but, you know, there are references to John Stamos, there's references to Jason Pollock. Somebody says something about Kevin Bacon at one point.
That's right.
You know, so I just love
that. I have a really hard time with that.
No, I know I ordinarily would, but somehow with these group of people, it worked.
I know, but this universe is so far removed from Earth that, like, these references don't belong there.
Well, Chris Pratt's character is from Earth.
I know, but... Yeah, that.
Yeah.
The other thing I like is this is always a test for me, a litmus test is all of these movies, every single time, you know, have that scene where, you know, the bad guys have prevailed, you know, and
All is lost.
Yeah. Everything is ruined, you know, everything is literally ruined. They're down to the ashes. And then, you know, somebody says, we have to go back and retrieve such and such from the villain's lair. And they say, but we are going to die. And he's like, I don't care. I'm going to fight for my honor. And then, you know, the other person says, me too, I'll join you. And then the third person, this is there in every single one of these movies. And it's here in this movie. And yet it somehow manages to kind of work. It manages to avoid cliche, even though we've seen this 100 times.
Just
about. But this is hard. I mean, I don't want
to... It tiptoes up to the edge, and I was like, oh, please don't. And then they just tiptoe back, yeah.
But I don't want to ever write a scene like that for an action movie. I mean, imagine whoever wrote it. I commend them for doing that. And that sappy ending, it should not work. But it completely worked.
It totally worked. I didn't want this movie to end.
Yes.
I do want this review to end, though.
Yes, okay. So, Joe, why don't you start us off?
You know, I sound like I hate this movie, and I didn't. I enjoyed it in the moment, but ultimately it was too lightweight and too disposable. I mean, you know, other than enjoying the, you know, the fun banter between the characters, I didn't find anything there to kind of really pull me in. So ultimately, it's a likable space opera, but they didn't feel like guardians of any galaxy. I never felt the galaxy was in danger, and I never really felt that they were guarding it. So I'm going to have to give this a slightly generous, given my comments, 7 out of 10.
Yes, Dee.
So I say that Joss Whedon, watch your back. Your position as the maker of the best Marvel movie may be about to be challenged. Mm. I mean, what do I say? I think this is, for me personally, this is what superhero films should be like. It's this movie's alive and it's fun and it's goofy and it's giddy. And like you, Rashmi, I can't wait to see the next one. 8 out of 10, easy.
This is the most fun you'll have at the cinema this summer. Don't believe Joe. This is a great movie and hopefully set up for many, many more sequels. I had a smile on my face for the entire time and the time I was actually writing my review as well. I want this group of people to be my guardians of my galaxy. 9 out of 10. I loved this movie. Loved this movie.
But to give credit where it's due, Joe, when is the last time you saw a goofy, brave action hero in a superhero universe? It's hard to do this kind of stuff. Last time I saw it was Harrison Ford doing Han Solo, doing this kind of stuff.
But I'm not sure that I want it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think that's ultimately what it comes down to is a taste thing, right? Right.
Yeah.
And superheroes in my world, it's the same problem that I have with the Star Trek reboot. So everyone loves those Star Trek reboots to bits, and I just can't deal with them. Yeah. The original one with Chris Pine a couple of years ago was so well received, and I couldn't deal with them. I find them too larky. I find them too lightweight. I find them too action oriented, and I think ultimately I don't feel the weight of the things that are going on in that world, which are the things that I tend to like about comic book movies. So that's why I have a hard time with this.
Yeah, so I think the difference
is it seems
like you like more serious comic books.
I want broody, melancholy superheroes.
Yeah, Joe only likes
because
Nolan.
Well, it's not that I only like Zack Snyder.
Jack Snyder, you're going to love whatever Superman versus Batman.
I'm terrified for that one because the thing looks so campy. The idea is atrocious.
No, it looks so dark. You can barely make out their faces against the background.
To me, the whole idea is preposterous. Those two characters don't belong in the same movie universe. Yeah. Now, I believe they belong in the same comic book universe, and The Dark Knight Returns, which is my favorite reference for comic book goodness by Frank Miller, is a great book, and it has both characters in there. But on the screen, in Chris Nolan's Batman universe, there is no place for Superman in there. It just doesn't make any sense to me at all, so I'm terrified for that. But anyway.
Yes.
For another podcast.
Yes.
Let's move on to our third movie of the week, which is What If?
So the director of All Gone, Peter Tong, and Goon from a couple years ago, Michael Dowse, returns with What If? Originally called the F Word when it first screened at the Tribeca Film Festival, the film has been inexplicably now changed to be titled as What If? And it tells the story of Wallace, played by Harry Potter himself, Daniel Radcliffe, who is coming off a bad relationship and runs into Chantry, played by Zoe Kazan, who is an animator in the movie. And the two hit it off immediately. The only problem is that Zoe has a boyfriend of 5 years. So you have right there the makings of your romantic comedy. The film co-stars the suddenly everywhere Adam Driver and a whole bunch of other actors. The film is co-written by Michael Dowse, and it's coming out the same weekend as some pretty big movies as counter-programming.
So, Yassi, you didn't see this one at Tribeca, did you? Or did you
I
hear
did
about
not.
This one?
No, I'd heard about it being called the F-word, and interestingly, it was called the F-word not for the obvious F-word, but it was called the F-word for F being friendship.
Right. Okay.
So
this feels like one of those experimental, small, archetypal film festival movies. It feels like an 18-year-old who knows everything, but you know it doesn't, and when it gets older, it will understand the mistakes it made. That being said, I did enjoy this movie. I just wanted to love it.
Yeah, I think this movie has a lot of problems, especially in the way that the story kind of plays out. But yes, you were talking about 100-foot journey when you have good actors sell a story and some lines that aren't quite what you expect them to be. And this movie has that too. I think the chemistry between Radcliffe and Kazan here just sold the movie to me. I bought them from the outset. I believed everything that their characters were thrown. And as a result, I found this movie very, very likable.
Yasti.
Yeah, I'm going to say the same thing I did for the 100 years journey. 100-foot journey. God, I hope it wasn't a 100-year journey. I think your response to this movie is completely depend on how you're wired. If you're the kind of person who gets diabetic at the slightest, you know, bit of sugary, romantic, hopeless, you know, starry-eyed, Google-eyed, you know, cinema, then stay the heck away from it. I like this kind of stuff, and I can literally this minute I can start writing a list of everything that's wrong with this movie, and I'd fill a couple pages very easily. I'd fill 100 things, but again, it doesn't matter, because if it's done with heart, and if it's done, you know, if it's not trying to insult you, even though you can see that it's so hopelessly romantic, it's done its job. I think
it's a rom-com.
Yeah, so I think it's completely a rom-com, and it completely plays by the conventions of rom-com. And not only does it that, it kind of wallows in them. You know, it really wallows in the conventions of rom-com. So, but I know I'm not saying this from a place of objectiveness. What I can say from a place of objectiveness is two things: that the movie is very well written, and it is funny. Okay, regardless of whether you like romantic comedies or not, I think it's a reasonably well-written script, and it's funny in places.
I think the dialogue is good, but maybe not the story.
Yeah, the story, yes.
So
yes,
I disagree with both of you.
Really?
Yeah, now, I love rom-coms. It's probably one of my favorite genres.
Is it really? I think you think it is.
Maybe I want it to be, but really, my favorite.
A horror fan, based on the movies that she's loved the last couple of years.
That's true.
I know.
But no, seriously.
Okay, maybe I used to love rom-coms. And I have that predisposition to like romance and comedy, Yazdi, like you were saying. But the problem for me was the tone and the dialogue, both which I think couldn't commit one way or another. For instance, it was trying to be very adult, but then it was trying to be very sweet as well. And then it wanted to almost be like sarcastic and witty, but then it wanted to be smart and clever. And so I think it couldn't decide what it quite wanted to be. And for me, it came across as like a younger, inexperienced sibling of like 500 Days of Summer mixed with When Harry Met Sally. And I think it was just entirely too sweet and a little precious. And the word I would use is twee. Because when you have characters whose names are Chantry and Wallace, I mean, it's just a little bit too precious. And so I think that stopped it from really being excellent.
And that's what I meant when I said it really wallows in those conventions. Like, couldn't Chantry have been, I don't know, a mechanic, you know, please. Anything but an animator. I mean, she literally animates little girls with wings which fly around in the movie. So it really wallows in those things. You know, so
I mean, and that's why I think it was, that's why I kind of call it experimental film festival movie. And that's not a derogatory term. But
it feels like a film school project.
Yeah, it feels like putting the kitchen sink, everything you can think of, in the film. Now, the weirdest thing is that I love that film, It's All Gone Pete Tong.
Mm-hmm. I love
that movie.
And Goon's amazing. It's on Netflix. If
I haven't
seen
Goon's, but It's All Gone Pete Tong is one of my most memorable movies, just because I love that whole club scene. Really good movie. This just, the tone really just didn't work for me.
I really like the dialogue in this movie.
Yeah.
I really did. There's a cleverness about it. Maybe it's trying too hard, but there was a wittiness about it. And like you, Joe, I bought the exchange between these two people. It didn't seem like these were two actors that the studio brought together and said, yeah, you guys are going to be a cutesy couple. I really believed that these two people in the real world would connect.
Yeah, I agree. I think there was clearly amazing chemistry between them. And I think the sub-story with Adam Driver was good, although, you know, it was the same Adam Driver that we see in Girls every week on a Sunday.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem I had. And I think seeing Adam Driver in this universe made me yearn a little bit for some of the grittier moments that we have in the HBO series Girls.
Yes.
Because that that show has a lot of the same themes in it in terms of, you know, male-female relationships, but...
it commits to being adult.
It brings a reality to this, what is a very sappy world that these characters in this movie inhabit. You know, they're all kind of idealistically romantic. And, you know, it is the 20-something thing. You know, it's the who will I marry, who will I love, who will I be with kind of, you know, whole thing that plays through.
What am I going to be?
Right, my life, my career, you know, choices that people have to make at that age. So it does that very well. But Girls presents the world in a more cynical way. And I think a little of that cynicism would really augment what we had here. Because here it's all about idealized jobs and careers and opportunities and, you know, this young guy gets an opportunity to go work in Europe and she gets an opportunity to go and work. It's all of this kind of, all of these kind of things are like, you know, everyone's always on their way somewhere up through the world. And, you know, Girls kind of, you know, doses the world with a heavy dose of, you know,
but
life can be.
But I think it's unfair to compare. I don't think this movie wants to be Girls.
I know.
It wants to be Harry Met Sally.
It does, and Harry Met Sally also had a little bit more. It was a little bit less sappy. I never think of When Harry Met Sally as a sappy film because there's enough cynicism in there. Like, this movie's
it's too predictable, right?
The chemistry between them and the boyfriend that's in the background. And, you know, again, I don't want to spoil the film for people who want to go out and watch this, but ultimately I think the way that this story plays out is exactly the way that you expect it to play out. And that's fine and well, but, you know, it's really hard to buy and love and be convinced by.
Oh, don't make Yazdi cry.
Joe's all like
doom and gloom today.
Yeah. I'm doom and gloom generally.
Rip somebody's heart out.
No, but I like this film. I mean, don't
cut your wrists. Come on.
Yeah. No, I have to say, I think clearly the problem was tonality. I mean, it really suffered, and I think that's the point you're trying to demonstrate, which is, you know, when and it's not a comparison between an episode of Girls and this film. It's just that Girls commits to being a certain way, and I think this movie didn't quite commit to one way or the other. And if it had gone completely the other way, like 500 Days of Summer, then I think it would have put a foot in one camp or the other. And I think that's the problem I personally had with this. But Daniel Radcliffe, he was great. You know, he's clearly no longer Harry Potter. He's doing a great job of not being Harry Potter. And Zoe Kazan, absolutely adorable to watch. I mean, Ruby Sparks. Yeah. Every time she came on screen, those big blue eyes. I mean, she was just adorable to watch. Yeah, Great wardrobe, too.
Yeah, she's in that other movie which was written by Joss Whedon as well. But, you know, Zoe Kazan, I mean, she's adorable. She's absolutely adorable. But, you know, she could very well become like Zooey Deschanel, you know, and become... too, you know, I hope she doesn't get typecast.
Yeah, she needs to be like Kick-Ass 3 or something.
Right, she needs to go do Greta like a Gerwig. Murder movie where she goes and kills someone. What?
She needs to go a bit Greta Gerwig.
Yeah, she needs to.
Yeah, or go naked somewhere.
Yes. Well, again, I think that might be an inherent part of her nature here. That's why she gets cast in these roles, because I think she brings that sweetness to
Because she doesn't have the traditional Hollywood affect at all. There's nothing about her which is Hollywood.
Correct.
Not in her face, not in her physicality, but there's... I'm glad that she's in cinema. She deserves... She belongs in cinema.
She's huggable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's... I mean, I think this movie is not nearly, or will never ever nearly be in the same league as 500 Days of Summer or any of those movies. That's so much more accomplished movie, and that movie has so much more pain to it. But I think for what it wants to be, it just wants to be like a sugar cookie. That's what the movie wants to be. And there's a cute little speech that Daniel Radcliffe's character makes at a wedding in the middle of the movie, where he kind of actually justifies the reason for the movie. Where he says, in this world, nobody's hopelessly romantic anymore. And he does this whole thing about being hopelessly romantic. And in a way, he's talking about, you know, why the movie is the way it is. And I kind of admired that.
Okay. So let's score this one. Yazdi.
I don't know. I think sometimes, you know, I've had enough of these gritty movies, and I think sometimes you need these stupid, irrational movies which have nothing to do with reality. But I, you know, I do like this genre, and you know, I think it's hard these days to do a good romantic movie, romantic comedy, because it's completely played out. It's been, you know,
it's inside, just, outside, upside down.
It's been scratched to the bone with everything. So I think I appreciate somebody still taking this on and trying to do something with it. So it's not for everyone. And if you're not wired to like romantic comedies, stay away from it. But for me, it kind of filled a space that belongs somewhere in my being. So I give it 7 out of 10.
Hmm. Joe?
What Yazdi said. I mean, really, it's not for everyone.
Right.
But if you let yourself, if you like this kind of stuff, even if you're not the hugest fan of this kind of stuff, but you just accept the movie for what it is, it's actually a very enjoyable hour and a half. And that's ultimately, you know, what a lot of people try and get from cinema. You know, they want to go, they want to get some escape, they want to sit in a world where things are lovely, and that's what you have when you go and see this film. And so for me, it's a 7 out of 10. Yeah, what Yazdi said.
So what if there was a really exceptional movie waiting to get out of this chrysalis? Unfortunately, it didn't emerge as a butterfly, although it was sweet and heartwarming at times. And for all of you women out there, or Yazdis and Joes, a great dose for the time of the month.
I would
say, yeah, 7 out of 10. I think that's a good score. Yeah.
It was nice. It's hard to recommend universally for the reasons Yazdi stated. It's not. Some people are going to go see this and think, what a sentimental pile of stinking poop. And, you know, they're entitled to that opinion, and they're not actually wrong. But, you know, if you like this kind of fodder, and, you know, one of my coworkers, I'm going to tell her, go see this film, because I know she likes this kind of stuff. And she will not only think this is an enjoyable movie, but I would imagine this is going to be among her favorite films of the year, just because of its tone and its sweetness and its sappiness. Some people just like to go see that at the movies.
Yeah.
And that's what you get here.
Interestingly, this was written by the same people who wrote The Grand Seduction.
Wow.
Yeah, and I can see that too.
I mean, see that too. No,
it was the director of this who wrote The Grand Seduction.
Right, that's it.
And, you know, there's some, that movie had some problems too with its contrivance.
But it had that same sweetness.
Yeah, maybe not the same slightly wicked sense of humor that film had.
Correct.
But it was going for something different.
See, but a movie like 500 Days of Summer or the criminally underrated Friends with Kids, which came out last year, I would have insisted that people go and see it, because I think those movies better the romantic comedy genre. They have such a wistfulness and authenticity about them. This movie has none of those, but I think it's because its ambitions are so low. It really just wants to be a sweet charm of a movie.
Yeah.
Well, I think it restores your faith in love and destiny.
I think the idea was trying to bring back the Harry Met Sally, because we haven't seen that story for a while. And it's the, you know, can men and women be friends without something else getting in the way? And it really was a throwback to that whole idea.
But
it's an overused trope, you know. I mean, we've seen it before and again. And
the thing is, we've done it so brilliantly. When Harry Met Sally did it so exceptionally well that I don't know what's going to top that.
Yeah, and I think the movie kind of does a bit of a fumble towards the end as well. I think this movie could have been, and I presume it's intentional, it could have played the last few scenes for a little bit more pathos and a little bit more pain.
Yeah.
But things kind of click into place a little too easily for my liking. So I think there was an opportunity for the movie, or maybe if they had even a different ending, there was an opportunity for this movie to carry a little bit more ballast to it, a little bit more heft to it. But
honestly, I don't think they wanted to do that to the audience. I don't think they wanted to put us through that. They wanted us to walk away with a very...
Love is great.
Yeah. Personally, I mean, I don't know what they were really going for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get ready to wrangle. What wrangle should we have this week?
Are all those people who are saying that Guardians of the Galaxy is the best Marvel movie smoking something?
Okay, we'll put a link in the show notes to this week's wrangle, rangl.com. Again, just a reminder, we partnered with the great folks over at wrangle.com. And let's...
Come and debate.
Come and debate with us on rangl.com. All right. In addition to Wrangle, you can interact with us by going to facebook.com/moviewallahs. We love your posts. Please post. Let us know what you've been seeing at the movies. Let us know what you think of our podcast. We love to get your interaction, and we will respond whenever we can. There's also mail at moviewallahs.com and twitter.com/moviewallahs as well. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.